From Mantilla's Multimedia in Courtney, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef and your host, Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron Howlett. We'd like to thank you for joining with us again as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Welcome, Darren. We're back in here again and kind of want to get a little bit serious, and I kind of want to sort of step out of our sort of promoting our community and sort of focus on a bit of a larger, actually more, maybe more of a global issue. And that is kind of looking into, where are all the cooks?
Yeah.
What's happening to, I want to say, our industry, but definitely my industry.
Yeah.
And where are all the people in the back of house going?
Yeah. Well, and that's something that maybe if maybe you're not aware, maybe the average listener isn't aware that out there, this is a big problem, and it's been slowly growing for quite some time. Labor, finding appropriate labor in back of house, as we call it, kitchen and all of that, has been steadily and increasingly difficult. And so much so that I think what really drove it home recently for here is that I don't want to slag anyone's reputation, so we're not going to mention them right now because, you know, however they might perceive it. But there's a fairly significant, substantial restaurant in Victoria that just closed its doors because they were just given up on trying to retain good staff. They weren't in any financial distress. They weren't having any problems, and they had a steady clientele. But they, for the time being at least, decided to close the doors because that was their only way of dealing with. And I mean, and not to, maybe I'm overstepping here, but we did something similar at Atlas just recently. We went from being open 6 days a week to being open five because finding a second string of reliable kitchen help has been impossible. And it's easier to just be open for five with the staff that's reliable and you can count on.
Well, and it's also the standard of living for those people. And taking care of our staff and realizing what a precious resource they are right now.
Right.
The people that are willing to put in the time and the energy. Mm-hmm. I guess you have to look at a little bit of the profession is a bit of a difficult profession because it's definitely a younger crowd that runs that, I had a great, great conversation today. I was able to get in contact with GoTo, which GoTo is the human resource for the BC hospitality industry.
Okay.
So I was lucky enough to sit down and have a little conversation on the phone today with Dennis Green. Mm-hmm. And he really focuses on the cook's back end of it. And they've been doing a lot of research, and they have a great little thing about what our resources look like right now and why people are getting into it. There's a 144 page document that they've done between 2015 and 2016, sort of looking at our industry and where it's going.
Right.
And so it was really interesting to sit down with him and sort of talk to him about what is going on with our industry. And, you know, my first question was, is there a cook's labor shortage? And it's, mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's not just a cook. It's all industries.
Right.
We have to look at the demographic of what's happening. There is a labor shortage right now, and it's affecting a lot of industries and is really affecting the food industry. Mm-hmm. Definitely back of house, and that's where I'm starting to feel it because I've gone from, having a stack of resumes, to go through and choose who I want to getting a resume and hiring that person because I don't have another body to replace them.
Right.
And it's not that I'm a horrible boss to work for. Maybe I am a little bit.
No,
maybe I have
no.
a little pressure. But I'm saying that it's just hard to find this demographic.
Right.
And so you got to kind of look at it and that it is a young person's job. Most cooks are under the age of 35. Mm-hmm. Most head chefs are under the age of 45. And so that kind of limits out your career a little bit.
Right.
I think you have to also look at our industry as broadening a little bit into many different areas. So you're not just looking at a restaurant hotel situation. You're looking at many other demographics.
Right. So when, you know, when we were coming up, when we were younger, if you were going into the food industry, if you were going into food preparation, your end goal was generally you were going to be in a restaurant or running a restaurant or owning a restaurant or something similar. And it's definitely branched out as food has become more prominent and, you know, we've become more socially conscious about where our food comes from, where and its journey. It's opened a lot of people's eyes to look to careers in other fields. And so we've found, whereas, again, talking 30 years ago, you wouldn't have a chef that worked at a farm, but now quite a few farms have chefs.
Yeah.
And back then, you wouldn't have, when we were talking about it earlier, where there was a lot of positions where we're like, well, that's sort of like that's a new position that didn't really exist.
Well, you're looking at a lot of grocery stores.
Yeah.
Are, you know, bringing in chefs because they're doing food presentation. They're getting that ready to serve dishes out there.
Right.
You're looking at a lot of, cafes, small cafes that were just in beverages.
They just were serving coffee. And I think I was maybe, I'm not trying to, you know, shut anybody down or undermine anybody, but we were talking about, you know, 30 years ago, a pub, you'd have a 15-year-old kid working a deep fryer in the back and that was enough. Like that was okay. Or now that absolutely not, you have to have a professional cook or chef in there. That's just the way it goes. So yeah, I can understand that the market is broadened. There's a lot more options and a lot more need for people with food training.
Yeah. Oh, and you also have to look at that our population is growing and that I think it's the first point that we're going to have more of our population is over 65 than under, you know, so there's a huge imbalance and a lot of people are getting out of the workforce.
Right.
So it's a lot of the people within the workforce trying to make up for that shortcoming, especially in an industry where people aren't in there as long. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a little bit more difficult to keep that flow of people coming in. Mm-hmm. I know just talking today, you've got, you know, the enrollment's still up there. Mm-hmm. Touch back on one of our old episodes, going into the culinary program, it's apparently it's 50-50. So it's half male and female going in there. Mm-hmm. But it's finding a lot of women are getting out a lot earlier, which was a bit of a surprising fact for me that they're not sticking out as long in the industry. And we'll probably touch on some of those reasons in a little bit.
Right.
But, you know, that's sort of it. So there is people going into the cook industry through the academic way. There's also a lot of people are being pulled from those schools to go directly into the workforce to work on site and be trained up. I know that's one thing I've kind of been looking at is finding in some youth just to bring them in and start them off in the dish pit.
Right.
You know, and then slowly build their way up.
That's the way that I'm just romanticizing the past, but, you know, that's the way I remember a lot of it. There wasn't a lot of people that we had a family restaurant growing up and nobody that we had working there, we had a stellar reputation, but nobody that we had working there had any professional culinary experience. They were essentially that old method of started off in the dish pit and got trained up to the point where, you know, they could handle running the kitchen themselves. And I know that a lot of people did that for a long time. And now, you know, yeah. And now that's just sort of, you don't see that so much anymore.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is maybe touching back into that as an option.
Yeah. Well, and apparently it's going to be a little bit tight too. Mm-hmm. So I hate to break it to any of you chefs out there and people that are in it, but, it sounds like with a population and what they're looking at, about 2020 is when we might start having a little bit of a turnaround. So it's a few years away. And that's when our youth are coming out of school. So there is a lot of children. I know I've been looking at my daughter, training her up. And
You need a good sous chef in 10 years. So.
Yeah, maybe. Or just someone to take over for me.
Right.
She can run the kitchen. So.
Yeah. That's interesting that, you know, talking about food trends as we have in the past, not so much maybe, but we do every once in a while. But food in general is a trend. You know, food, just focus on food. And I mean, you know, Food Network started, 15 years ago? And it's just getting stronger and stronger. People are just more interested in food and getting involved in food and where it goes. But you also, when we had a pre-sort of discussion about this earlier today, you brought up a really good point that I hadn't thought of, which is a lot of people see all these people becoming overnight sensations on various Food Network shows, and they think, oh, well, that's it. Like, I'm just going to be a rock star, and I don't need the formal education or the training. I can do this. And then their hopes are dashed. They might have the excitement behind them, but then their hopes are dashed when they realize, no, you need the skill too.
Yeah, it's that repetitiveness that comes along with the career. Maybe we should just break into a little bit about what it's like to be a chef.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I did talk to Dennis about this, and we're talking about, you know, we have to build it up as a good alternative. I mean, it's tough because I know there's a lot of issues with pay, but there's other ways to work around that are bonuses. I mean, definitely working in the food industry, you're never going to starve.
That's true.
Unfortunately, you may live off staff meals, but
yeah,
there is opportunities and you will get introduced into things. I kind of think it's funny in some ways because I know there's a lot of instances where you're pushed. Mm-hmm. And I'll admit, I work a lot of hours, and most people think
I'm
absolutely crazy for the hours
I put in. I think that's the general consensus, yeah, that you're crazy the amount of hours you put in.
Yeah, and it's really having a work balance is kind mm-hmm. of one thing that's hard. But for me, it's a bit of a control thing, and it's, you mm-hmm. know, having a consistency and being there and supporting my team and being with the
right
people and that's one of the best things I found about being in the food industry and cooking is that you're with a team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky to be the guy at the top, but that doesn't mean I get all the luxuries and I get to sit back
right
at my desk and sip on coffees and create these menus. You know,
right,
I slug it out with the rest of you, and I'm down mm-hmm. on the line, and I'm pushing dishes through. I'm peeling potatoes. I'm dicing onions. You know,
yep,
like, I get it. I do a bit of it all, and
yeah,
you know, I'm cleaning up messes after people. So
I think that's where you know, there's a lot of similarity between you and I, and not in that exact regard, but we're both as a boss. I'm not currently a boss, but I have been a boss in the past. We both don't expect everybody to make our job easier. We just need them to help out while we sort of lead and do the job. Like,
right,
you don't expect everybody to do everything for you. You're down there doing everything with everybody. And if anybody's going to have to put in extra hours, it's generally you. And
right,
yeah, and I get that for sure. Yeah, and but you're saying, as we were talking before, that there are other benefits to, you know, maybe the hours aren't as enticing, but...
Yeah, and that's kind of it. And the fact is that it's really broadening the spectrum too. Is that mm-hmm. Everywhere is hurting right now for
mm-hmm.
for cooks. So I'm not just looking for restaurant cooks. I'm mm-hmm. not trying to promote just that. But there are people that do better in different situations. There's like working in a small restaurant
mm-hmm.
or a smaller restaurant, like, say mm-hmm. the Atlas Cafe where I'm at, you know, you're under that intense pressure. You're creating something. It's a little bit of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's complete chaos. and you know, there's structure, but
right,
it's very loose structure.
Right.
Because we're doing something a little different. Whereas you can get into a lot of institutions or larger hotels where it's a lot more structured and there's a
right
lot more systems. And some people do better under those circumstances.
Yeah.
You know,
yep,
I like the chaos. I like the craziness. I like to be on my toes. I like that challenge. But for some people, that's a bit overwhelming.
Right.
And drives you nuts. And
yeah,
probably would give you an ulcer.
But, you know, and not, again, not trying to create a hierarchy or say something's better than the other. But also, like, with chain restaurants, you know, a bit of that, too, where the majority of the positions there's not really room for creativity. They're looking more for somebody that can properly, you know, do the same repetitive motion over and over,
mm-hmm.
which, and that's where some people thrive. They like that. They get fast, they get efficient, they get what have you.
Oh yeah.
And, but yeah, but then there's other other sort of venues where, it's more about the creativity than maybe about repeating the same dish a million times.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess the real question is what do we do about this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, as an employer, how does it help you? having your customer come in, how does it make life better for your customer? What can you do for your customer?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the real points that are kind of, that's the challenge we're at. And we know it's not going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of trying to figure out ways to make the system work a little bit better for you. I know a lot of, like, as you brought up chain restaurants on that,
right?
They have the opportunity that they spend a lot more money on human resource.
Right.
And I think what has to come down in restaurants is really focusing on your human resource aspect of it. So definitely, thank God I talked to GoTo,
right?
Human which was able to give you a little bit of advice and sort of directions to go with that, you know?
Right.
So spending that time looking for the right people to fit in the right spots, making more of a work-life balance. I think that's the biggest thing for people, especially getting into this trade. That's like my thing. I just lost a cook today, and I just brought in, gave him a couple shifts, and it just wasn't the right fit for him.
Right.
It was just, I don't know. It was, I'm not going to speculate or say something about him, but it just wasn't what he was looking for. So,
right.
And I'll try again.
Yeah.
So hopefully I can find someone else, and it's definitely trying to find those people.
Yeah.
I don't think, I know people are going to argue with me about this, but pay. But I don't think pay is the thing. It's compensation and finding a way to compensate people. And money isn't always a compensation.
Right. It makes up part of it, and it might make up the majority of it. But compensation is definitely doesn't just mean a paycheck.
Right. And so I think that's something you have to look at, it because I know a lot of people are taxed. Restaurants are getting more expensive to dine at, and I know that price keeps. I mean, everyone can notice it when you go out to dine, whether you went out 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You're paying quite a bit more to enjoy the same food you were getting a couple years ago.
Right.
And there's lots of aspects from that. Food costs have gone up. There's no staff. Labor costs have gone up. So that challenge is out there for everyone.
Yeah.
But, you know, finding things that make people's lives easier and making it more available to work around. And so that's the problem, is trying to balance those hours. And I mean, that's what we've had to do at the Atlas Cafe, is with cutting down and being like, we're going to do 5 days a week, five solid days a week. And we're going to work our butts off in that time. But then you guys are going to have 2 full days, so you don't have to worry about anything.
Right.
You don't have to stress about this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of makes that work life a little bit more bearable. I've been I've been working 4 days a week.
Right.
And then taking the other 3 off. I also do a podcast. I don't know how this works out, but
it should also be mentioned, though, those 4 days a week, you're doing 12, 14, 16 hour days at the least.
Yeah. Well, I'm usually going in at 9 o'clock and getting out between 10 and 11. So
yeah,
they're full days, and I'm not getting much of a break. But you know what? I got food everywhere.
Yeah.
I can take a little snack or something, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely always have a coffee there for me. So that's a good aspect for me.
Yeah.
And I get to work with an amazing group of people who challenge me in a way that I like, as in coming up with new ideas and striving to become more.
Yeah.
And challenging me, or not challenging me, but just being supportive and being there and just being hardworking individuals. So.
And I'm not trying to turn this into an episode where it's a big pat on your back, but one thing that I've noticed that the majority of the customers that will make a comment about food or you know, those little offhand comments, they're always talking about one of the best things about Atlas is the consistency. One of the things, you know, they haven't been there for 6 or 7 years, and they come in and it's consistent. Everything is consistent. And I used to think that your need for control that you sometimes will talk about, but you need to control that. I used to think that was a weakness of yours. And now in the last few years, I've realized that the reason that things are consistent and the reason that people come back, and they come back knowing that that consistency is there, is because they have, it's you demanding to be in control, saying, no, the most important thing we can do is a consistency. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you're like, no, I'll be there. Every single meal that we serve, I'll be there for that.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a toll there, but at the same time, it shows. It's one of the keys to the success of the restaurant.
I've learned that from Trent. So And him bringing that philosophy in there. And yeah, it's tough on the body some days, but it's part of it.
As we're talking back on topic, how do we, like, how is that going to affect as this labor
sea change? That totally goes in my next little subject, is just productivity and focusing on and changing it and streamlining it. Like, here's a huge industry that, I mean, this is my next step, is to start streamlining my menu.
Right.
I have a huge menu. Yeah. We do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There's a lot of items on there. And so it's taking those items and streamlining them and making them more easier and requiring less people to do.
Right.
You know, there's, you know, how many people do you need to serve 100 people? You know, I used to need 4 or 5. You know, well, I've only got 3 now, so I've got to make that menu so that I can serve those same amount of people. So it's streamlining, and you can see that with a lot of places, definitely in our fast food, fast casual dining places, which they're coming up and you're getting self-service, you're getting, I mean, you can look at all your fast foods, McDonald's, that, you know, you pour your own pop now. Those are the streamlining things that a lot of restaurants are going to do. So it's streamlining a bit of the service. You know, when you go into a place and you're doing the service yourself, there's no longer, you know, someone to do it for you.
And this is one of those ways that places are countering. I mean, it's not necessarily just about cost effectiveness. It's not about saving a buck. But this is one of those ways that some of these places are dealing with the shortage of labor is, well, we put some of the onus back onto the guest.
Yeah.
And then we can also reduce the price a bit.
Yeah. And it also changes the atmosphere of places as well.
Right.
Like I was talking to, I don't know if they probably won't mind, but I'm going to say Cornerstone.
Right.
Whereas they had servers in there before and they've switched it up that it's all bar service now.
Right.
And Daniel was telling me that he likes that philosophy because then it gives people the ability to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're no longer stuck at your table.
Right.
And so you can, and being a tap house, it gives them that opportunity to branch out and do that. So I think that's kind of something you have to start to look at the future, you know, how to make your, streamline your menu, give yourself a couple dishes, and maybe make them good.
Like, right.
And that's how you can make your business better. Keep it simple. I mean, food doesn't have to be complicated.
Right.
I think we've definitely, over the years, have made food more complicated than it ever needs to be.
Well, we've got 140 episodes of trying to discern and figure out all those little details. So, yeah, I think we have made it pretty complicated.
Yeah. I mean, I still, one of my favorite things to have is a carrot straight out of the ground. So you can't saute that or do anything to then it.
Yeah, it changes
them fresh like that. I mean, people talk about immigration. The unfortunate bit is I don't know how much that's going to help us.
Right.
Just to be in this, everywhere is looking for staff. I've looked at it everywhere. It's not really that much of a help. I know there's people wanting to come in here and then we'll get into the food industry and I'm completely supportive about immigration. Not that I'm trying to say immigration is bad. I don't believe in that in any way. I'm kind of open to a free open world. Like why are we discriminating against anyone and where they go? But that's a whole nother subject.
but I know what you're saying is that it's, or at least in our area, it hasn't really been a factor. It hasn't really, immigration hasn't given us more employees to choose from. We're still facing that same labor shortage.
So I think what has to happen is we have to find a new group, which I think is our children right now. That are going to look at this. We have to definitely look at changing how we do things.
Yeah, I think, I'm not saying like, oh, you know, all the solutions lie in the next generation. But if you do look at our kids, I mean, I have nephews, nieces, children. I have, my children have friends. I know some of you may be aware, some of you may not be aware. I also own a toy business. So I do come into contact with children a lot. And food is definitely a bigger thing for kids now than it ever was before. Kids are very much aware at a younger age of food. And it could be just because it's what we talk about at the dinner table nowadays, or, you know, it's part of their routine, whereas it wasn't really before. So they're just aware. And I do think that, this next generation, or the one that's, you know, currently in school, I think that we will see some sort of whatever that shift is. I'm no way in any way am I able to make some sort of educated forecast, but I think that, you know, they will definitely pick up the torch in some way,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily solve everything, but there's going to be a lot more of them involved than in the past.
Yeah, no, I definitely see the industry changing a little bit, and it's kind of figuring out where we're going to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting just chatting today. We're talking about, say, Europe right now. They're mm-hmm. having shortages, but they don't have as many culinary schools.
Mm.
So they've decided that they need to increase their culinary schools, whereas in the United States, they have lots of culinary schools. But then you've got a lot of people going in there paying large dollars, large sums coming out of there, and they're not going to go flip burgers.
Right.
So that is a bit of an issue in a same. Is education mm-hmm. a fix for it? I think it's getting people out there and educating them about the different fields they are.
Right.
I know definitely I've talked with North Island College and mm-hmm. with them, you know, they're asking us what we want out of the program, and we're like, we just want bodies at this point.
People that know how to cut themselves.
We want people who want to cook, but, you know, and part of their thing is showcasing and putting people into the right spots and finding what their skill sets are that they can take and move to another place. I mean, you're looking for reliable people mm-hmm. and you want to trust. I know there's a lot of thing about a lot of chefs moving around right now too. And mm-hmm. as being an up and coming chef is getting out there and working as many places as you possibly can to get as much experience and learn as much as you can from these top chefs. The drawback is, you know, if you hire one of these guys, they're going to last 6 months, a year, and then you're back at the same spot trying to find another one. I guess it's a little bit a part of the business, and it's keeping that work-life balance.
To sum up, there isn't one solid answer. There's just a lot of little adjustments that maybe need to be made. We're not just going to magically be able to make or solve a labor shortage. We just have to, these are some adjustments that can be made.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of see like it's definitely that wages are going to have to go up a little bit.
Right.
And it's finding compensation for people. Mm-hmm. And whereas in training people, giving mm-hmm. them something more valuable mm-hmm. when they come to you, or giving them something when they come to you that makes them more valuable at the end of it. Right.
Right. So,
and that's what I'm looking for definitely is, as I said, you know, it's people with the right work ethic and the right work passion are the people I'm looking for. And I hate when I hear people say about these lazy millennials and how they're good for nothing and they just don't have that same work ethic. I kind of feel like when I was a kid, I had that same
label
on me. And I think my parents had that same label on them. I think,
older generations are always sort of ragging on the younger generation, saying that they're ruining the world. And they're the ones that are at the heart of all the problems. And
technology is bad.
Right. And right now, they're saying that the big problem is the millennials. And the truth is there's no problem there. I think we were talking about it earlier, the biggest thing that millennials probably don't want, or probably the biggest issue is that they don't want to be called millennials, because who wants to be lumped into a group that everybody has unsavory opinions on?
Mm-hmm. And this group is very diverse.
Yeah.
Different races, different religions, different everything.
Economic background.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's great to have this, this different ethnicity out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big one. Actually, we're talking about today too, is just ethnic restaurants. There's no formal training for a lot of them out there. So if you're looking for different foods out there, the professional training's not there
mm-hmm.
to be able to learn how these skills and to keep these flavors around. So that was another interesting thing I took out of the whole conversation.
It's unfortunate that he wasn't able to make it onto the show. We'll have to endeavor to get him on for another episode.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this is, and that's something we'd like to do too, is get some more video conferences. And I know calling people from other areas to give their little two cents about what's happening in the world of food and what's happening in our world.
I'm glad that we talked about this. I know that you've wanted to talk about this for about 6 months now. It's kept being on our roster of future episodes.
And it kind of had me at a point that I was like getting close to throwing in the towel because I'm like, why do I kill myself so hard for this?
Right.
For people who don't appreciate and don't understand what's going on. And
yeah.
And then I'm kind of looking at it like, well, that's not what's happening. That's just me going into a self-pity thing about right. having to work ridiculous 16 amounts.
Hour days.
But at the end of it, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm doing 4 days, 3 days off.
Yeah.
Life's not that bad. I still get to be able to pull off this podcast and and chat and meet some amazing people and find out what they're doing. Anyways, we should talk a little bit about some of those amazing people that help make this podcast possible.
Mm-hmm. We should. Other people that are just as passionate and putting in just as many hours, I'm sure, in our local food industry. We've got Ivan's Truffles, of course. We have Butcher's Block, who's been such a great support of ours for so long now. There's Atlas Cafe. All of these are in Courtney, by the way. If you're looking for any of them, you can find information on them on any of our sites, any of our contact. We also have Kirsten Wood Music, who's been a great support and help for some time now. And, of course, Matilla's Multimedia, who we've... Without James, we wouldn't be sitting here right now talking. So thanks for all the support.
And definitely, we'd love to hear from you. If you could, if you want to send us a review, comment, subscribe to our podcast site, any of those wonderful things, we really encourage you. We'd definitely love to hear from you. If you're an up-and-coming business, if you're someone out in the community who's doing something with food, definitely give us a shout. It's probably easiest to get hold of us through email. You can get us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. We definitely will get back to you as soon as possible, and we'd love to have you on a future podcast to sort of just tell us what's going on. You definitely can follow us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a little thing going on there where we try and support a few local businesses as well as ourselves and talk about interesting things that are going on. And then we do have our Facebook site, the Edible Valley Podcast. So you can definitely become a follower there. Help us talk about all the wonderful things that we have in our wonderful Edible Valley here. And we also encourage you to get out and check out your own Edible Valley. There's so many wonderful people producing food in your industry, in your area, and you should just get out there and find out who they are. So we'd just like to thank you once again for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.
Thanks.